Blog Talk Radio.
Unfortunately, sometimes it gets real here in the alley. What I mean by that is every once in a while, Bo and I will be together in a room. And then when you add Hall & Oates, sometimes the circuits just overload. Sometimes things get entirely way too real. For those that tuned in yesterday that were expecting the Power Alley, well, unfortunately, you just got served with a real moment. You just got served with something that is uncontrollably beautiful. Steve, Bo, Hall, and Oates. That's a winning combination right there. Welcome to the Power Alley. Steve Silver from 1090 The Fan here in Seattle, Washington. Bo Reed from Let's Talk Rangers in Baltimore, Maryland, by way of Austin, Texas, and soon, ladies, soon, Los Angeles, California. Bo,
yeah.
How the hell are you, my friend?
You know, I've got a Rangers game on right now. We're talking a little baseball. I mean, how could you not be in a good mood?
Well, for those that know me, and for those that were asking, what the hell? Well, unfortunately, I almost killed myself in a car wreck, and so understandably,
yeah. You
know, we had to go through the motions, Bo. We had to go through the motions of me getting back on my feet. So here we are, and it's good to be here. So, yes, you're absolutely right. Things were bad, and now they're good. But for you and I, it's kind of like, well, you know, we're kind of like in the middle of the AL West kind of looking up at the Houston Astros saying, what? Yeah, what? Huh?
Well, I mean, okay.
Wait a second.
Well, first of all, I mean, they built that lead on a 10-game win streak when the rest of the West was slugging it out with each other. So, I mean, let's just call it what it is. It is May. Let's
well,
see what
no,
this team
actually,
does
what
rest,
it what
the
it
rest
is,
of the, rest of the way.
It's a 10-game. They built a 10-game lead when the rest of the AL West was really just crappy. I mean, let's be honest.
Sure.
I mean, the Mariners, you know, God didn't really get off to that great of a start. As a matter of fact, still trying to find that identity, still trying to put the pieces together. And the Texas
right.
Rangers, say what they will. Your Texas Rangers was snake bitten again a little bit by the injury bug. Has one good half of a lineup and then has a terrible half of the other part. And so the Rangers are still trying to put the pieces together. The Angels, well, you know, they have Mike Trout and really nobody else. And so, right, I mean, the A's right now, 4 games sitting below 500. And you know, they themselves are starting to still trying to figure out their identity. So, yeah, the Houston Astros did exactly what you're supposed to do, play this game without an ounce of fear and take advantage of some of these teams that are still trying to get their tread, trying to get their bearings. So, yeah, I mean, good for the Houston Astros, but let's be perfectly honest, Bo. They're the Houston Astros. Let's be perfectly honest. Right now, yes, it's nice to see that Houston find it is the Astros have a pulse. Great. Congratulations. Let's clap our hands. Fine. You got a pulse. But it's the Astros. It's the Astros.
Well, you know what I find interesting? I actually, you know how we are, Steve, like both of us. Like, we don't look at the standings until at least May. Sometimes I wait until Memorial Day.
No, I look at the
before
standings.
I glanced at the standings yesterday, and what really stood out to me was you had, the Rangers 9.5 games behind the Astros, but only a game and a half out of second. And so, you look at this, like the rest of the American League West, it's, we're all looking up at the Astros right now, and hey, kudos to those Astros. That's one heck of a start. I think that they're still a year away. I don't think they're as good as they played over the last month. But that being said, I think the West, if you look at it, you've got the four teams that people thought could legitimately win this division, separated by a game and a half. A hot Astros team was able to build quite the lead, and I've seen this before. The Rangers did it in 96. They won their first seven. They built a lead. They were able to hold that lead. Maybe the Astros can do that. Maybe they are better than we thought. Maybe they are arriving a year and a half, 2 years later. But
no, I don't.
Sure.
I don't. Right, and I wouldn't read too much into it because let's be perfectly honest. Right. The Astros are getting great performances from Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh in their rotation, and nothing else.
Sure.
Spots 3 through 5. They were getting some phenomenal production in the lineup, and then all of a sudden today, George Springer is out today, being evaluated for a concussion. So he's going to be out of the lineup maybe a couple more days. So another domino falls. And I would expect some regression towards the mean when it comes to it. Because right now, I mean, I don't think there's any lineup right now that 1 through 9 that's as hot as the Astros. But that's eventually going to take its course. I'd like to see this team play this way through the next cycle of the American League West, when the Mariners do have their gears, when the A's do have their gears, and of course when the Texas Rangers do have their gears. And it's not going to be the same. They're probably going to play everybody tough, but they're not going to sweep the Mariners 4 games in a row in Houston. And they're just not going to do that. So we do have ourselves a phenomenal show today, Bo. Outside of talking about those Houston Astros and those mustache loving New York Yankees, who, by the way, are playing phenomenal baseball, we will talk about a little bit of some of those hot teams, of course, those hot and sexy mustaches on those New York Yankees. We'll also talk about the teams that are not hot. And by that, I mean the Seattle Mariners, and by that, I mean the Texas Rangers, and by that, I mean pretty much every other team that we thought was going to be good, and now they're really not all that good. Doesn't mean they're not going to be good, but right now they're just not playing up to expectation, so we will also get into that. But today's feature... What's up?
Hang on. Steve, it took the Rangers a month, but they finally won back-to-back games. Let's give them a little credit. Not much.
Oh, stroke. Sorry, buddy. But today's featured conversation is going to be, I'm going to ask you, Bo, and we're going to ask some people out there as well, too. Go ahead and join us at 714-816-4704. Is it too early to start thinking about some of the sellers out there? What's kind of funny is, unconventionally speaking, Bo, it is a little too early to start thinking about sellers. But then again, there are two specific teams who might actually benefit by trying to get ahead of the market and try to get out maybe either some contracts or maybe just try to get the best deal right now, pinpoint it, get those players in place now, and give them at least 6 more months for the rest of the season inside a major league lineup, inside what they expect them to be. It could be some very interesting conversation, specifically two teams, the Milwaukee Brewers and the Philadelphia Phillies, two teams that are absolutely going nowhere, but then again have some talent that actually might be useful to a team like, say, Houston, maybe a team like Seattle, maybe a team like Detroit, the New York Yankees, some of these other teams that might be a piece or two away. And it might be interesting to think that, okay, well, listen, yes, conventionally speaking, anybody would be right to say, well, it's May the 6th. Maybe this is a little too early. But then again, like, I'll give you a good example, Bo. A team like the Chicago White Sox that really have not been playing anywhere near up to expectations, but a tremendous amount of money, they would be absolutely insane right now to even think about blowing that team up and possibly getting rid of a few pieces. You really like it would do them no good to try to trade a guy like Jeff Samardzija now, when they still theoretically are still into it, and it's until entirely way too early. But then again, a team like the Milwaukee Brewers are out of it. The Milwaukee Brewers are done. They ended up firing a manager, and they have a couple pieces, Kyle Loesch and Gerard Parra, that a couple teams probably would love to have those, and they have a guy like Carlos Gomez, who, by the way, still has another year left on a very club-friendly deal, but then again, if the right deal comes along, maybe then they might be even to move him. Same with a guy like Gene Segura, who they have no need to trade him, but then again, they have tremendous amount of organizational depth at shortstop, so maybe they might be able to get something for him. And of course, Ryan Braun, if there's a team that is willing to take the money and also be willing to give him a fair amount of deal, maybe even Ryan Braun might be able to, but I think at that point, maybe it's a little stretch because, you know, they still got to sell tickets. On the other hand, the Philadelphia Phillies, Bo, this is a team that, you know, if Ruben Amaro would just get his head out of his you-know-what, okay, I'll say it. If he just gets his head out of his ass and understands that, okay, fine, you have no shot to compete this year. You have Cole Hamels. You have Ryan Howard. You have Chase Utley. You have Jonathan Papelbon. You have pieces that will help teams right now. And you know what? Sure. Maybe, just maybe, one of these teams might be willing to take one of those contracts if you would stop demanding the entire solar system for them in return. So maybe if Ruben Amaro Jr. with Pat Gillick as his advisor says, listen, let's go ahead and get ahead of the market. Let's get a deal in place that's going to net us some pieces that we can get them into our system or get them onto the Major League roster, get them playing time now, get their feet wet, and by next year they're going to be able to hit the ground running. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first, Bo, let's start looking at some headlines, shall we?
We shall.
Today, with the Washington Nationals, Bryce Harper hits 3 home runs, and one of them was a 440-foot blast. It was an absolute beautiful, towering shot. And, oh, by the way, Bo, yeah, he's only 22.
Yeah.
He's only 22, and he is the youngest player since 1969 to accomplish this feat. The floor is yours, Bo.
Well.
You don't like Bryce Harper, do you?
Here's the thing with Harper. You know, I really want to like Harper. I want to have the same opinion of Harper that I do as Trout. That being said, one, Trout's a much better player. And let's be honest about that. You're talking about probably the best player in baseball in Mike Trout. He handles it better. I mean, Bryce Harper, honestly, he brings a lot of the flack against him on himself. You know, like going to the batter's box and swiping the Braves logo when he gets to the batter's box, fighting with his manager in a winning season. I mean, those are the kind of things that will turn off baseball fans. It doesn't matter what Alex Rodriguez has accomplished what in this sport? Incredible things, but because he's such I don't want to say it, but he's such He's such an asshole that you can't appreciate what he does. And I fear that we're going that direction with Bryce Harper. You know, baseball fans appreciate good play. We appreciate stats. We appreciate records being broken. We do. Mm-hmm. But look at the home run record. Everyone talks about Hank Aaron. No one talks about Barry Bonds for a reason. People talk about Willie Mays. You know, they don't talk about Alex Rodriguez, even though they've hit similar numbers of home runs. No one talks about Alex Rodriguez in the same light as they do Willie Mays, and I feel like that's where we're going with Bryce Harper. He's a phenomenal player who's, by the end of the day, when it's all said and done, it's going to set records. He's going to be up there on the home run shots. He's going to be up there.
You're right. And what's interesting about this is Barry Bonds, and what's funny is the reason why people don't talk about Barry Bonds is not because of the whole steroid thing. A lot of people were not really thrilled about that, but because he treated people so badly. And the way that he came across rubbed people such the wrong way that a lot of people just didn't like him. And so that's when people start talking about Barry Bonds, it's not because of the steroids, it's because of his personality. It's not because of A-Rod and the steroids, it's because of his personality and the way that he comes off. And I'm completely with you. I like Bryce Harper. I think Bryce Harper is phenomenal. I think Bryce Harper is a great player, but he's also an asshole. And that's the thing. He's going to end up being alone on an island with all his money and everything around him, and he's going to be surrounded by people who are just going to tell him what they want to hear, what he wants to hear, but he's going to feel empty at one point in his life. If Bryce Harper were smart, he would take a deep breath and start treating people a lot better and actually care like he gives a damn, Bo. At least act like you care.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. I'm completely with you.
Well, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, everyone makes a big deal out of respecting the game. A true baseball fan, baseball player, respects the game. That is paramount over anything else. No matter what you do in this league, no matter who you follow as a fan, the paramount importance is respecting the game. Will Ferrell got hit. You know, he did his thing in spring training, and it rubbed people the wrong way because they felt like it was disrespecting the game what he did that day.
Yeah. Yeah,
Harper.
If you look at
Harper, one of them clearly respects the game. One of them respects the game 24/7. The other one's like, "Hey, look at me." And that's not the way it's done.
It's funny. Imagine being Matt Williams, a guy who did nothing but respect the game of baseball, was very much respected by all of his peers in the game when he played, phenomenal hitter, and being the manager of this guy. Can you imagine him just being like, "Really, dude? Like, it's this guy." Anyway. Hey, Bo, let's turn our attention now to Los Angeles, where, you know, Don Mattingly wouldn't go so far as to use the setback, but clearly Hyunjin Ryu's rehab from a left shoulder impingement has hit a snag. Dodgers manager said that they've slowed him down a little bit as just a precautionary flag because of a lack of velocity during a Friday bullpen session. He was shut down at the end of spring training in hopes of calming the inflammation that sidelined them twice last year. But now, Bo, there are signs that the injury is more severe. And, of course, Mattingly goes on to say, you know, you're always concerned with the starter, but from the standpoint that they slowed him down at all, you think about it a little bit, but I haven't had a major sign that I should be really concerned. It's nice to see that he's saying that, but if you're the Los Angeles Dodgers right now, Bo, and you see that Clayton Kershaw hasn't gotten off to a great start, I mean, Zach Greinke's been okay, but they have been decimated by injuries in that rotation, and now they're relying on Brett Anderson, who is a DL casualty every single year. And now you've already lost old boy from the New York Yankees last year, former Diamondback, former A, Brandon McCarthy for the year, and now you're still waiting on Hyunjin Ryu's rehab. I'm not going to sit here and say that Andrew Friedman is in panic mode, because I don't think Friedman is ever in panic mode, but I'm wondering if he's starting to pick up some of these calls and trying to get a feel for what's out there on the market, because right now the Dodgers are in a situation where they've spent X amount of money. There is expectations for this team to be in the World Series, and now all of a sudden you lose McCarthy, Kershaw's not really pitching all that well, and now Ryu's probably not going to be back for a while. You have gaping holes in spots 3, 4, and 5. Don't give me Brett Anderson. Okay, that's fine. If he can stay healthy, maybe you can come at me in a couple months and say, like, yeah, Brett Anderson, I might buy it then. But right now, don't even give me that guy. And the way that I look at this is, this isn't exactly what you want to hear if you're a Dodger fan, that you're still going to have to wait a little bit for more for Ryu. And right now, you're kind of looking up at that rotation saying, who do we got? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, well, you're talking about a shoulder with Ryu, and I mean, you know, after what happened in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you understand probably better than most people do. I mean, the shoulder is a very complex part of the body, especially for a pitcher. And anytime you have even a slight, I don't care if it is a slight strain, you have a slightest problem in that shoulder, all it takes is one bad pitch, and you're out for a while. Derek Holland, perfect example. Had shoulder tightness early in camp, on the last warm-up pitch before the home opener, he's out 2 months because of one pitch. And that's the way the shoulder works. That's how complex it is. So when you're talking about the shoulder and the Dodgers trying to say, okay, well, you know, it's minor, it's an impingement, okay. Everyone that lives in a big city, let's say you have a massive accident in the middle of a Mixmaster, what's going to happen? Even a minor accident in the middle of a Mixmaster, what's going to happen? So a minor impingement could be one big problem because it's the shoulder.
Right. I mean, I had a minor impingement, and they were recommending surgery. So, yeah, I mean,
exactly.
it's funny. But yes, I would think that if I was Andrew Friedman, I would say maybe trying to set the stage for Cole Hamels. But you know,
yeah.
If they're asking for Corey Seager, if they're asking for Jock Peterson, you know, then you're probably going to be like, well, maybe we'll go find somewhere else.
We're going to find.
It just depends. You're going to have to go find somewhere else. It just depends. But I wouldn't say that right now the Dodgers are in dire need or dire straits of a starter. But then again, you know, you were expecting this to come back. It didn't really work out. And now all of a sudden there's going to be no time to tell because he's been shut down. So you're probably expecting to get a clinical look at this. Maybe there's something that's actually torn. Maybe it's a little bit more than information because they're not really trying to put that out there right now. But this is not good news for you. It's not good news for the Dodgers. And if the Dodgers are actually serious about this, maybe, just maybe, you know, you're going to try to trade from I guess that's a spot that might be a little thin. But think of it this way. If you're the Los Angeles Dodgers now and you need starting pitching help right now, maybe you just might go to Seattle and say, hey, listen, we like Ronis Elias. The Mariners right now probably can't afford to trade Ronis Elias because he's in their starting rotation because Iwakuma went down. But we're talking maybe just a couple more weeks when Iwakuma comes back and he's going to be in the rotation, and all of a sudden maybe Ronis Elias has to go back down to Tacoma. Maybe, just maybe, that might be the time to pull the trigger on a deal involving, say, I don't know, Andre Ether. The Mariners, this is going to be the time when maybe Yasiel Puig will come back into the mix, and then all of a sudden, maybe Andre Ether becomes a little bit more expendable when Puig comes back. The timing might be right, and maybe you could just say, hey, listen, Andre Ether for Ronis Elias might not be straight up, but then again, if there's a need, and I know Dustin Ackley has not been playing all that great anyways, and I hate the whole change of the scenery. I hate the whole change of scenery conversation, Bo. It just, to me, it sounds weak. But then again, maybe you get him into a different organization and they get a fresh pair of eyes on him, and maybe, just maybe, because defensively he's fine. Ackley's fine defensively. It's offensively that he's been absolutely horrendous, and you put him in a lineup where you're not depending on him at all. And he can just be comfortable. He can relax. He can get into a new organization with a different hitting instructor, a different set of eyes with guys like Don Mattingly. And maybe they pull the trigger on a deal that sends Ronis Elias and Dustin Ackley to the Dodgers for a guy like Andre Ether, because the Mariners desperately need a left fielder. And maybe they can use Ether in a platoon because he's very good against right-handed pitching. He's terrible against left-handed. Maybe this might be a way for both the Dodgers and the Mariners to kind of fix something a little bit.
Maybe. Maybe, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, at this point, I mean, it's really early to talk about teams selling. It's really early for that, but
I wouldn't consider that a sell. What I would say, that's a lateral move. It's two teams trying to strengthen some obvious weaknesses. And granted, Dustin Ackley is the throw-in piece. What they really get is Ronis Elias, a 22-year-old flame-throwing lefty from Cuba, to stick right into the rotation, right behind Brett Anderson in the four, and it gives them a little bit more depth. And then obviously, Dustin Ackley would probably be, I wouldn't say the starting left fielder, but he would definitely be the fourth outfielder. And then Scott Van Slyke can, you know, roam left field until Carl Crawford gets back. Something right along that. It adds depth, and that's something that the Dodgers need. And of course, it gives the Mariners a nice little piece. He can actually go to Seattle and get some playing time out there in left field. Anyway, kind of got a little bit off track there. But, Bo, noteworthy news, Steven Strasburg has a little bit of a shoulder injury himself, although the Nationals right now are poo-pooing it. But yesterday's start, he only lasted a third before some tightness. He was taken out of the ball game. So that's keep your eyes on that. And, of course, Jeff Samardzija didn't appeal. He will serve his 5-game suspension, and Rendon will get the hill for him today, I believe. So there you go. There's some news. Let's go ahead and get into it, Bo. Surprise teams. I know you and I didn't think the Yankees were going to be anything. You know, at best, where they're going to be a 500 team. At worst, they're probably going to be a 90 loss team. But here we are now, 27 games into the season. This team is 17-10. Seven games above 500. Right. They're scoring almost four runs per game at Run scored per game is 4.85, so they're actually almost averaging 5 runs per game. They're a plus 32 run differential. They're getting very good off. They're getting good, very offensive production, of course, from A-Rod, who's having a pretty good year. They're also getting some very good pitching as well, too. I don't know about you, but I think this was, and I said this at the time in the offseason, I said maybe the most underrated, under-the-radar offseason was Brian Cashman and what he did with the Yankees. Slowly but surely, he kind of retooled the Yankees, and here we are now, 30 games in, and this team is 27 games in. They're 7 games above 500. Quick, your thoughts on the New York Yankees.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily that they're a surprise team. I think they've got a surprise couple of players. I mean, you look at what A-Rod's done, you look at what Teixeira's done. Teixeira's been injury-riddled the last couple of years. A-Rod, of course, missed all of last season. We all know that. I think the fact that they're off to such good starts is a bit of a surprise. You know, but you look at the Yankees, and you know, we talked about this in the offseason, right, leading up into spring training. You know, if this happens and if that happens, those things are happening for the Yankees right now. And they're 7 above 500. This baseball season thus far has been weird. I mean, let's be honest about it. It's been odd. The teams that we pegged for 500 maybe are 7 games above 500. Of course, I'm talking about the Tigers as well as the Yankees. It's been a weird start to this baseball season, and I think what's fascinating is, does it continue? Do the Tigers play better than we thought?
Speaking of the Yankees, yeah, and you're absolutely right. Mark Teixeira has about 108 plate appearances this year, and now granted, you know, you look at it, and he's like, well, you know, he's hitting 205. He's hitting 205. You know, you look at – but that aside, don't look at the average. Look at some of the other things that are going on. He's got a 324 on-base percentage, a 602 slugging percentage. The dude's got 10 home runs and 22 RBIs at this stage of the year, which is something that for a guy who is traditionally a slow starter, he got off to the type of start that you would need him to get off to. And speaking of A-Rod, 227, not exactly the greatest batting average in the world, but then again, throw it out the window. Who cares about batting average? Put that aside and look at the fact that he's got a 340 on-base percentage, and he's slugging 489, and oh, by the way, 6 home runs, 16 RBIs, and by the way, he just tied Willie Mays on the all-time home runs list, so you can't deny the fact that both of those guys have played a huge part offensively. And then when you go down the list and you kind of look at some of them, Stephen Drew, 4 home runs, 10 RBIs. Yeah, he's hitting a .167, and those peripherals look pretty good, but he's starting to chip in a little bit. Carlos Beltran has really been horrible. Brett Gardner's been pretty decent. Ellsbury's been decent. And you're right. I mean, right now, all the Yankees really just need is just a couple more guys really to kind of fill in the gaps, and all of a sudden, that is going to be a very good team. And, of course, pitching-wise, this has been fantastic. Michael Pineda looks pretty decent. Tanaka, they're all doing this without Tanaka, but they're getting phenomenal bullpen work. And you know what? Their starting pitching has been okay. It hasn't been horrible, but it's been okay. Sabathia is what he is at this point in the stage. But for the most part, Evaldi has been fantastic. Pineda has been fantastic. They've gotten some pretty decent performance. I guess the question that I have to you is, knowing that really for the most part they're doing it without Tanaka, Pineda's been okay, and Sabathia's been horrible, but then Evaldi's been pretty good. This is probably going to be a team, Bo, where if the Yankees can just tread water, maybe they're going to be in line to be big sellers come a little bit down the road.
Maybe. I think when I look at the Yankees, you know, I see how they're winning, and that does kind of bother me a little bit. It gives me a red flag, because you can't cover a 162 game schedule winning this way.
Right.
Eventually,
right now they're basically just getting some decent pitching, but for the most part, this team is basically coupling two to three good innings together and just kind of holding on for dear life. I kind of get what you're saying there, but right now, when you look at the rest of this division, nobody's really playing well, and that includes the Red Sox. They really haven't had great starting pitching performances from a rotation that I thought was going to be a little bit better than they were. They have not been good at all. Of course, the Blue Jays, we've been saying it all along about the Blue Jays. They are exactly who they are. So that's not anything crazy. And, of course, those Blue Jays, by the way, are in last place, 13-15, 2 games below .500. The Red Sox, 1 game below .500. The Orioles at 500, who I do think the Orioles are going, they're going to be the team that's probably going to win this division. Of course, the Rays in second place right now, trailing the Yankees by three. In the Central, the Royals, now all of a sudden, in first place. Yesterday the Tigers were, now they're flip-flopping the Royals, 17-9. Is that, I thought there was going to be some regression, so I don't know if that was, this is going to be a surprise to you, because I didn't think the Royals were going to be okay. I didn't like the fact that they didn't even at least try to make runs at James Shields and try to bring back some of those key guys. But then again, maybe it doesn't matter because this team is playing pretty decent baseball, 17-9, back and forth with the Tigers. Is that kind of a surprise that they got out to that type of start, or is this something that, you know, you kind of expected?
Well, you know, most seasons it would surprise me. But like I said earlier, this has been a weird season so far. It's been a weird first month.
Right.
I mean, you're seeing teams playing far better than their talent suggests they should be. You're seeing, and this is why it's really pointless to look at the standings right now. I mean, it really is. I mean, yeah, you look at the Central, you know, they're jockeying back and forth between the Tigers and the Royals right now, two teams that we thought was third best in that division. You got the Indians in the basement right there with the Rangers,
right,
and the Mariners.
That, if there was any surprise, probably that Cleveland sitting in the basement right now, when a lot of people thought that Cleveland, including me, was going to probably win this division. Now they're at 9-16. The White Sox, who you've actually picked to win this division, they're at 9-14.
I did. Right.
And the Twins, who we both finished to pick last. And I said, and I thought the Twins were going to be better this year. I thought when we asked the surprise team of the division, I said the Twins. And I didn't mean it as a surprise they were going to win it, but to be not that bad as we've seen. And here are the Twins now, one game above 500, right at 14-13 right now. That, to me, that along with the Indians, is more of a surprise than seeing the Tigers and the Royals up there.
Right. I mean, look at the season so far, Steve. The Mets won 11 straight. The Astros at one point won 10 straight. That's how weird this season is right now. In fact, you know, a couple of days ago when I looked at the standings league-wide for the first time this whole year, I actually sat down, I looked at the standings, I immediately got up, I filled a drink, I walked outside to see if the moon looked different. Because it is completely weird.
The world,
the whole
it's
season
upside
is weird.
Down. It's the world as I know it is upside down.
And then,
ah,
of course,
crap!
You know, the Mets,
so,
you know what? Yeah. The Mets, after their streak was broken, they've started to play like the Mets that we all know and love. The Astros have lost two straight since their 10-game winning streak. Maybe, you know, maybe May is the month where the moon gets right and baseball gets to be where it should be. But at the same time, one thing that we haven't talked about, one thing we haven't discussed, is a lot of these teams, whether it's the Astros, the Mets, these teams that have been at the bottom for so long, they've also been accumulating early round draft picks that are now reaching the major league level. Okay, I think maybe, you know, instead of blaming the moon, as much as I'd love to, I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing this talent that these teams have been building the last few years with their early round draft picks reaching the major leagues and being exactly what we thought they were.
Right. Speaking of those Astros, those hated Houston Astros, and I know, Bo, that you absolutely despise the Houston Astros, but then again, you have to give this team some credit, considering they have really adopted the style of play like their leadoff guy, Jose Altuve. This is a team, and seeing seven games facing the Houston Astros, here's the thing that I know that they do. Number one, they strike out a ton. Okay, this team strikes out a lot. There's no doubt about it. They don't seem to care about strikeouts, because if they did, they wouldn't have brought in Cole Erasmus, who, by the way, strikes out a ton, and they wouldn't have brought in Evan Gattis, who, by the way, strikes out a ton. But they don't care about those type of things. They just don't. They punt the idea of strikeouts. Who cares? Who cares if you strike out a whole bunch, as long as you hit the ball hard a whole bunch? And I think that kind of evens itself out. And sure enough, so far through the first month of the season, it has. I like the attitude that they've taken. They kind of peeled off their leadoff hitter. If you've seen Jose Altuve, and by the way, nobody in their right mind really likes Jose Altuve, because he's a pain in the ass and he kills every single team. Nobody can seem to stop him. But I love the way he's basically the new age Pete Rose. He's all hustle. He's all heart. And if you give him a first pitch fastball, and I don't know why you would give him a first pitch fastball, but he'll turn on it.
I don't either.
And he'll just completely wreck your entire day. this whole team has adopted that style, and they have no problem swinging at first pitch fastballs. As a matter of fact, they insist on it. And what's kind of funny about this is this team is just go, 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 go all the time, and I kind of like that a little bit, but I'm wondering if it's going to start to catch up to them, and if not in May, is it going to catch up to them in June? And if it doesn't catch up to them in June, are they going to get the same pitching performances from Keuchel? Are they going to get the same pitching performances from McHugh? What else are they going? I mean, what else do they have? Do they have Fausto Carmona in their rotation? Well, excuse me, his name is Roberto Hernandez now, but they got him in this rotation. This is an okay starting rotation. They got the Feldman. They got Scott Feldman in the rotation, for Pete's sake. I mean, listen,
at the top of it. You have Dallas Keuchel and
good.
Scott Feldman. That's your one too.
I like Keuchel. Keuchel is really good, and I like McHugh. McHugh
Keuchel's very good.
Since coming to Houston, has been phenomenal. Feldman is Fausto Carmona and it's what's going to happen first? Is the offense going to come down and just finally take a deep breath and actually come down to earth, or is it going to be the back end of that rotation that's really just going to let them down? Which happens first? Does it happen at the same time? And if it does, what type of drop are we going to expect here?
Well, I do think that this team will eventually turn into a pumpkin. I really do. You know, that
pumpkin
being
status,
said, I think they're eventually going to, and it's really just because that rotation is suspect. I mean, outside of Dallas Keuchel, you got four guys, one of which is a seasoned veteran, but he's a veteran with inconsistency. That's why he has bounced to a couple of teams. You know, you've got an offense that if you watch them, you know, and I've got a good chance to watch them the last three nights. The Rangers are in Houston right now. You know, if you watch this offense, they do accumulate a lot of strikeouts. What's fueled their 10-game streak that they had, what's fueled their start is timely hitting. They're doing very well with runners in scoring position when they get them on base. But they also go through stretches where they're not getting them on base. I believe Wandy Rodriguez, sat down 16
Horrible.
Straight Astros last night.
Horrible.
16,
Horrible.
16 straight Astros last night. So
horrible.
By the way,
if you're the Astros and you were kicking the crap out of everybody in that division, and all of a sudden you get punked by Wandy Rodriguez, I think that says anything. Because Wandy Rodriguez, by the way, should not be in Major League Baseball, but because the Rangers have a need, he's there. I'm with you, and I do think the Astros, as good as that story has been, they're going to come down. They're going to come back to earth. And I don't think it's going to be the Angels, who, by the way, are sitting at 12-15 right now. I don't think it's going to be the Angels, although they seem to play well together. You kind of look at how things are going now. Obviously, Garrett Richards is now their ace. I think on a good team, he's like a number two, but on that team, he's their ace. Jared Weaver has lost about 3 to 5 miles per hour on a fastball that was only topping out at 89 anyway. So we're talking about a fastball that's really kind of like between like 82 and 84 maybe. And he's been getting shelled. He is a complete shell of his former self. He can't seem to get anything else except for that fastball over for strikes. And obviously, it's been doomsday for him. And that is a team that slowly but surely, they got Shoemaker back, they got Richards back, and maybe just maybe once they get Skaggs back, and slowly but surely they're going to get some pitching back. And who knows with that offense? I mean, it hasn't been good, but it hasn't been great. Trout's been okay. Trout's been okay. Pujols has been okay. You kind of expect a little bit more of an uptick from those two. And then, of course, last night, these are the type of wins that kind of get teams going. I mean, the Mariners came back on them last night, had a 4-2 lead. Then they score two off of Farquhar. And in the bottom of the night, the rookie, gets just a hanging cheddar. You know what I mean? It's like it was like hanging fruit. And then, of course, he hits the walk-off home run, and they end up beating the Mariners, coming back 3 runs in the last two innings. Anyways, those are the type of wins that seem to galvanize teams. And, of course, you got the Mariners and the A's that are right behind, nipping at the heels right now. And you expect those two, you fully expect the Mariners to finally get things going. Everybody understands it. And you talk to baseball execs, Bo, and you talk to scouts, everybody says the same thing about the Mariners. They have too much talent for them not to be good. Everybody expects that team to finally put it together. And, yes, granted, last night's loss was terrible. But then again, you're starting to see them take one step forward, and that last night happens, and they take two steps back. But you're starting to actually see them take steps forward, where in the first month of the season, you were wondering, like, what are you doing? I mean, outside of Nelson Cruz, it's like, you know what I mean? Now it's like you're starting to see Logan Morrison come on a little bit. You're starting to see Zunino starting to come up. Kyle Seager kind of regressed a little bit, but you know Kyle Seager is going to be Kyle Seager, and Cano and Cruz are going to be fine. And now we're starting to see James Paxton look good. We're starting to see Walker pitch well. You know what you're going to get from King Felix when Iwakuma comes back. And, of course, Jay Happ has been pretty decent up to this point. So, yeah, I mean, once the offense gets rolling, everything else will stabilize. The bullpen will stabilize. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that once the Mariners get on a roll, they're going to be a hard team to stop. And, of course, I think the denominator in this one is we still don't know how the A's are going to play. And, you know, up to this point, they've looked okay at times, and they've looked terrible at times. I don't know exactly what the A's are going to be. I think we know for sure what the Angels and the Mariners are going to be. I think for sure we know exactly what the Astros are going to be. But I think I don't know what the A's are going to be.
Yeah. No one does. I mean, they had a huge turnover in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
This division's really weird right now. You know, I hate to say that again, but this division is really weird right now.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, you look at it, you know, like I said earlier, you know, the Rangers sit there a game and a half behind. The Angels are half a game behind the Mariners, a game behind the A's. I mean, it's so tight between second and four behind a team that we all expect to turn into a pumpkin at some point soon. That, to me, is the real race. It's what's going on with the other four teams in this division. Houston is much improved. I don't think they're there yet, but they're much improved, and I think that they're going to come back to the pack. And the pack is incredibly tight right now. And what you said about Seattle, you can say the exact same thing about Texas. You really can. I
well,
mean, you look at the Rangers.
Well, kind of.
You look at the Rangers.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you're right, because when you think about it, is if
once the offense gets going.
I mean, the good news is Leonis Martin is starting to hit a little bit better. They're still not getting much from Andrus. You're not really getting anything from Odor yet. Chu has been really not all that good. And then, you know, Prince Fielder has kind of came down a little bit. Then you lose. What's crazy about this is you couldn't afford to lose anybody in the lineup. Then you lose Mitch Moreland a little bit. But then Kyle Blanks steps up. Kyle Blanks, the journeyman minor leaguer Kyle Blanks, who has been in pretty much everybody's farm system, all of a sudden through six games is hitting .391. So, I mean, Kyle Blanks has been hot. 3 home runs, 5 RBIs. You don't expect him to do that. But, I mean, what the Rangers cannot afford is to have Odor and Andrus hit the way that they're hitting. I mean, right now those two are horrible. And Sinshu Chu cannot hit .151. I mean, he can't. I mean, put it this way: if Sinshu Chu was hitting .151, but he had like a .350 on base percentage, you wouldn't care because he's still getting on base. At least he's scoring runs and getting on bases, drawing walks. He's not even doing that, and he's not doing.
Yeah.
And most importantly, it's not like he's been facing a lot of lefties either. He's been not really good against righties. And he's supposed to be. I mean, that was the one thing at least you knew when you signed him. Okay, great, he's a split. He's a platoon split type of guy. And when you looked at him, it's like, it sucks. You spent $100 million on a guy who's really just kind of a platoon split guy. But you very well knew that at least against right-handers, he was going to be at least decent. And so far this year, he really hasn't. So maybe he picks it up a little bit. Beltre's got to be better. Beltre's got to be way better.
Sure. Yeah.
And really, for the most part, it's like, Carlos Peguero, Kyle Blanks, Chirinos has got to play better. Once they get Rua back, that would be great. But Smolinski, Odor, Andrus, all of those guys. I mean, if the Rangers are going to be the Rangers of what everybody expects them to be, they're going to have to be an offensive-led team. And right now it's like Prince Fielder.
Oh, I disagree on
and
that.
It's like Prince Fielder, and that's the whole thing.
Team,
it's like
Steve.
It's like I can't name anybody else except for Prince Fielder that right now has a pulse. And but then again, I mean, they did score 7 runs against the Astros and they made them look foolish. So I think incrementally, I want to see Leonis Martin. Like I said, Leonis Martin, Elvis Andrus, at least play better. You know, I mean, it's fine if Odor doesn't really do it or Chirinos doesn't do it. Okay, fine. But Martin, Andrus, and Chu. And, you know, those guys, and Beltre, those guys, I mean, you can't have a lineup that's basically Prince Fielder and that's it.
No, you're right. But I'll tell you what, you know, you look the last few games, okay? Elvis Andrus is hitting better. Chu is hitting better. In fact, Chu just hit a 2-run home run. The only one of all those players you listed that has just not quite got it yet is Rougned Odor. But let's remember, he's 21 years old.
Right.
He's 4 year. He's still a kid. And, you know, Kyle Blanks is hitting out of the world right now. I don't expect that to continue. Figueroa hit a home
right.
run tonight. You know, he's had two home runs in the series. So I think my point is, the same things you were talking about with Seattle are the same things I've been thinking about watching the Rangers. It's, okay, this is going good. This not so good. This needs to get cleaned up. This will help this get cleaned up. Okay? I remember it's May.
Right.
It's May.
The other thing
and
to consider,
these teams are still gelling.
They are, and that's the whole thing. Is there's no set time when a team's supposed to get traction. When it happens, it happens.
Right.
A few years ago, the Anaheim Angels were pathetic and mediocre until June 8th, and all of a sudden, a light switch hit, and that team was awesome until they ended up running away with the West. I mean, that team was crazy talented anyways, and everybody assumed they were going to do it anyways, but it took until about June 8th, and then it finally
right.
happened. So I'm not really concerned that
yeah.
the Mariners and the Rangers are sitting where they are, as long as they're not completely out of it. I mean, what I mean by that is like 15 games below 500 come June. You know what I mean? Like, right now
yeah.
they're 7, and within a week they can be, like, 4. You know what I mean? Like, within a
yeah.
week they can gain 3,
I mean,
or maybe
look,
more than that. I mean, but
look
that's
at
the whole thing.
Lead the West.
Right. I mean, it's right
yeah,
now it's 6.
The West was as tight as 2 through 4 is right now until Houston went on a 10-game winning streak.
Right. I mean, and that's the whole thing. Things can change within the span of the week, so really the only thing I want to see the Mariners do from that standpoint, or even the Rangers, is just shore up that offense and just – everybody wants to point out the runners in scoring position, yeah, but guess what? It's not just that. It's the fact that they're just not hitting, period. Not in clutch situations, they're not hitting, period, outside of Nelson Cruz. So, listen, I mean, it's
yeah.
just being able to hit consistently 1 through 9, and guess what? Everything will take care of itself. And that same goes with the Rangers as well, too. And by the way, the Rangers need to score first, because their record when they score first is unbelievable, and it's really bad when they don't score first. So they actually really need to score first and score early. Score early and
well,
score often, and they're fine. If you look, by the way, here's a funny stat, by the way, in case you want to know this. Over the last 5 years, the Rangers are the best team in baseball when they score first.
When they don't score first. They've got –
When they don't score first, they're just an okay team, and they're okay, and they're
yeah.
only just an okay team when it's the score is tied in the seventh inning. I did some research, buddy. I'm just letting you know the Rangers
oh,
are very good when they score
you're
first.
You're the stat man. Yeah, well, you know, they
very
got 4-0 lead in the bottom
first.
Of the second tonight, so I guess that's good.
it's good. Turning our attention real quick before we get to our main topic, the Mets in first place. I don't think that's a lot of a surprise to anybody, Bo, just considering the fact that I think a lot of people knew that the Mets, or at least they were going to pitch the lights out. It was going to be
yeah.
just exactly how much offense they were going to get. And so far, I mean, through the first month of the season, they were incredible. I think the big surprise is the Washington Nationals. They're a team that's not really pitching well. They're not really hitting all that well, and they're creating a ton of errors in the field. And if they don't watch themselves, Bo, not only are they have to worry about the Mets, but also the Braves, who are sitting at 13-14. They're not really a great team. And, of course, the Marlins, who are at 13-15, those two teams all of a sudden are going to give that Nationals team a run there in the NL East. And the NL Central, the Cardinals, of course, 20-6, best team in baseball. I don't think anybody was surprised. The Cubs are a game over 500. That was kind of a little bit of a surprise to me. I didn't think they were going to be all that good. And then, of course, the National League West, the Dodgers, of course, in first place. And, of course, the Pirates, the Padres, one game above 500, Bo, 15-14, 3.5 games out of first place. I think a lot of people really just, when you look at the National League standings, you're like, okay, well, yeah, no problem, no biggie. It's like wash, rinse, and repeat. You know, no biggie. We kind of understood that. Maybe the Nationals will finally pull their head out of their ass and make it a division. But right now, tip your caps to the New York Mets, because right now the Mets are relevant.
They are relevant. And I think what's equally as surprising in that division is the Nationals are not right now.
They're relevant for all the wrong reasons, buddy. They're relevant for all the wrong
yeah.
reasons. So I have never seen a team play – I mean, right now – the Mariners and the Rangers aren't really getting stellar defense. I mean, they have very good defenders, but right now they're just not playing great defense. That's different. And then you look at the Nationals, and they're just playing horrible defense. I mean, guys that you wouldn't expect to play bad defense are just playing bad defense right now. And seriously, when you got that type of talent on the mound, most of these pitchers require the fact that you have a good defense behind them, and they're playing terribly right now. So that's going to be interesting, because we know that the Nationals have talent, but whether or not they're going to be able to get out of their own way, that's going to be interesting. Bo, feature conversation tonight, and I asked the question a little bit earlier, about maybe is this too early in the season to see teams sell across the board? I mean, granted, I understand it's May the 6th, and we have seen in seasons past it doesn't happen once every 3 years, once every 5 years, not even once every 10 years, but maybe once in a blue moon you'll see a team get a trade early that they'll end up getting a guy that's going to end up having some impact for the rest of the year. I know that the Mariners ended up getting Jamie Moyer from the Boston Red Sox back in '96. That happened on May the 10th, and as you know, Jamie Moyer had a phenomenal career with the Seattle Mariners, and you know that quite a bit because the Texas Rangers were victims of Moyer at pretty much every single turn. The thing about this is, though, specifically two teams, mm-hmm. the Milwaukee Brewers and the Philadelphia Phillies are out of it, completely out of it. And there's a handful of teams that have holes. And it's going to be interesting to see this, because normally you would think, okay, well, maybe you would want to wait a little bit towards the trading deadline because you're going to be in a situation where maybe you can get one team pitted against another and maybe the price goes up. But then again, if you're a team like maybe not the Philadelphia Phillies, but if you're the Milwaukee Brewers and you're a team that is looking for young pieces, returnable commodities, wouldn't you think you might want to get a little bit ahead of the market, get those guys into your system now, give new manager Craig Counsell an opportunity to work with them, because we're talking about it's just May. So you have June, July, August, September, so you have another 4 months, then the off-season programs, then a spring training to come back into next season. That's an awful lot of work to be had, and I would probably think it might be a little bit beneficial to get ahead of the market, maybe identify some players, get them in quickly, and allow also the return pieces to settle in with that team as well too, i.e. say a guy like Kyle Loesch, who could get into anybody's mm-hmm. rotation. You know, you can get him comfortable early and let him hit the ground running in the second half. Don't you think that maybe that it might be a good idea for a team like the Milwaukee Brewers to possibly get ahead, or is it still too early for you?
I don't think it's too early. And I think that when you look at those, like, I'm talking about the Brewers, of course, and the Phillies right now. I think we're about to see the difference between a really good, savvy GM and one that has no business being in his job. And I don't think it's a secret of who I'm talking to there and which one is which.
Are you talking about Doug Melvin versus Ruben Amaro?
Of course I am. I mean, like, you know, Doug Melvin has been a very good general manager in this league for a very long time.
Well, and he's also in a market like Milwaukee that doesn't win often. He's put together some pretty decent teams there in Milwaukee. Yeah.
Yes, I agree with you there.
Yeah.
Yes, he has. And in fact, he built the first division winner in Texas. I mean, let's be honest about that. I mean, this is a guy that's got one heck of a track record. And I think that he recognizes just as much as any GM worth his salt will, that when it comes to the mid-season trade, the earlier you make that move, the more prospects you get in return, because teams are getting more out of that season from that player. So you look at the Brewers, they've already changed managers, which I love their manager. I think Craig Counsell is brilliant as a managerial choice. I want to see what he does in Milwaukee. But you look at this, you've got to rebuild. Everyone knows that about Milwaukee.
Right.
You've got to rebuild. They've lost too much from the last few years. It's a team that has to rebuild. The Phillies were there, what, 2 years ago? And they still haven't started. I don't expect the same mistakes from Doug Melvin in this particular case. And you look at this, they're not going to win this year. They're not going to win next year. But they've got some pieces that could get them prospects that will accelerate that rebuild. And Doug Melvin will absolutely pull that trigger. So I think Milwaukee is one team to watch this month, not what they do on the field, but what Doug Melvin does off of it. Because if he can get ahead of the game and trade away some pieces, he's going to get a better haul than he will, say, July 31st.
What I will say about this is the market is going to be greater now, because as you get closer to the July 31st deadline, you're probably only going to have a handful of just a few teams. You know, obviously there's going to be contending teams, and who knows, maybe you might be able to get a haul, but generally speaking, those type of hauls don't come until the off season. Those deals usually happen in the offseason. You might get some pretty decent deals, but now your pool is a little bit larger. Not only would you expect maybe contending teams, but you also get some bottom feeder teams like that are rebuilding teams that also could maybe this look at an opportunity to bring in somebody that can also push the rebuilding project further along. Maybe shrink that gap 1 year instead of waiting for another three. Maybe it shrinks to two.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's just say the Minnesota. I'll just throw the Minnesota Twins out there. Obviously, that team is going to be in constant rebuilding, and of course, they could use a dude. They probably could use a dude like Gene Segura, or maybe maybe a guy like Carlos Gomez, who, by the way, is under a team-friendly contract for not just for this year, but also for next year. The Brewers have no reason to trade him. But then again, I mean, if you're a team like the Seattle Mariners, who desperately need a left fielder, and who knows, maybe you can make something work out where you can give the Brewers some, you know. And by the way, there's familiarity with the two because of Jack Cerenzik's time with Milwaukee organization. So, I mean, there's a lot of things
right.
that can happen there, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the thing I like about getting ahead of the game now is the pool is much wider than it would be in say, you know, July 31st. And maybe some of those teams aren't willing to give up some of their top prospects, whereas now maybe some teams don't really know what they are yet, but getting a guy like mm-hmm. Kyle Loesch could help them out. Getting a guy like Gerard Parra could help them out.
Right.
Getting a guy like maybe Gene Segura, who, again, he's not even arbitration eligible, but then again, they have such organizational depth at shortstop that maybe they might be willing to part ways with Segura if the deal is right. And that's the whole thing. The Brewers are intriguing. The Philadelphia Phillies, on the other hand, Bo, blows your mind.
Or not.
I don't – like, you would think that it would be the same thing around, that you would get ahead of the market, and maybe you might be able to get some really good pieces in return, and maybe you might even convince a team to take on a contract. You know what I mean? If that team was ran right, this would be an excellent time for the Philadelphia Phillies to unload Hamels, Papelbon, and clear like, I don't know – you know, clear at least $500 million in total contracts off their roster, but there is no—I have zero faith in Ruben Amaro Jr. to actually even be that savvy.
No, he's not that savvy. If he was that savvy, he would have dealt Cole Hamels at the winter meetings.
Right.
If he was that savvy, he would have gone on MLB Network and told the entire world, "Yeah, we're rebuilding." I mean, we do that, but.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, we want your top four prospects and then maybe somebody off your 25-man roster.
I mean,
At this point,
I really want to play Ruben Amaro Jr. in poker. I really want to, because he's sitting there in the winter meeting, and he tells the entire world,
I got a pair of nine. You're in a dogfight in a poker game, and he's like, I got a pair of nines. And you're like, really? You went all in on a pair of nines? Really? I got a full house. Dude, give me your money.
Exactly. Good point. You know, so that's why I chuckle when you say I don't think he has that savvy. Clearly he doesn't. Because that was would Jack Cerenzik or John Daniels or Theo Epstein have gone on MLB TV in that situation and said, oh, yeah, we're rebuilding. Of course not.
No.
They wouldn't say that. Why would you ever say that? And he did it on national television at the winter meetings.
I think there are certain teams that, yeah, they. I don't think it's too early to sell. I think the time is right, and especially, like, I'm not saying that it's time for, you know, like I'm saying that it's time for the Blue Jays to sell, because again, at 13-15, even though they're in last place, you know, they're only 4.5 games out of first place, and of course it would be absolutely insane for the idea of the Blue Jays to be sellers. Same thing with the White Sox.
Right.
Like, I get it, right? They're 9-14. They didn't get off to the start that you thought they were going to get. Haven't really got all that great pitching. Sale's been eh. Samardzija's been eh. Now he's suspended. And there's that. Okay, great. But there's no way in hell that if you're the GM of the White Sox, you're like, all right, well, let's just blow it up. No, you've sunk too much money into that team to do
right.
that after 23 games. Now, the Indians, if things continue to free fall for the Indians, then maybe in June we can start talking about, like, I want to see what happens in May with the Indians before we start having the conversation about maybe this might be a good idea to, you know, see what you can get for Kipnis, or see what you can get for Bourne, or see if maybe Michael Brantley might come available. I doubt it, but you never know. I mean, I want to wait a month before we start having those conversations. And the same thing with the Rangers. I mean, maybe, I want to see what how May goes for the Rangers before that becomes a relevant conversation, because you do realize, Bo, as a Rangers fan, if they have a sub-500 May and this team is, like, below, like, at the 10 to 15 games behind range at the end of May, they're sellers at that point. And then it's realistically, at what point do you think, like, what pieces would actually strategically move to be moved? We'll get into that conversation as well, too. But really, there's only two teams right now in this, you know, really right. in this league right now that you can look at and just say, hey, right now they are sellers and they would be benefited to get off the ball, you know, get off the pot. It's either piss or get off the pot. And it's the Milwaukee Brewers and it's the Philadelphia Phillies. And there's only one team of those two that actually is smart enough to actually realize that, and that is the Milwaukee Brewers. That's what I believe, at least.
Well, you know, I think what you have to look at too is you also have to balance what's happened in April and the first week of May with expectations of a club. And I think
right.
that's what we're talking about here. You know, you look at the Brewers, no one expects them to contend. We've known the Phillies were rebuilding 2 years ago. Apparently, Amaro just had a drink at the winter meeting and said, oh, yeah, let's rebuild. Okay, I mean.
Yeah, you know, let's rebuild.
Why not? Of those teams, you know, I think that if the Cubs had gotten off to a bad start, you may start talking about them just a little bit. You know, if the Astros had gotten off to a bad start, okay, maybe you flip some of these guys we signed
right.
or we traded for some pieces because the expectations weren't there. But the fact that, you know, you got so many teams that are struggling that you didn't expect, the Indians, the Mariners, the Rangers, the A's, the Angels. I mean, you're talking about all these teams that have struggled out of the gate, but the expectations are better for that club. And these general managers are expecting better out of their club. That's the difference.
Right. Right.
Oh yeah. Get ahead of the curve.
You know what's?
Absolutely.
You ever think about how crazy it is that the Milwaukee Brewers hitched their wagons to Ryan Braun and how mediocre he's been since he's been off the juice?
He has been mediocre, hasn't he? It's really been quite the fall from grace. Quite the fall from grace. But, you look at those Brewers teams, you know, they had good pitching. They had good pitching. And I could even suggest that the Brewers actually started selling in March when they dealt Gallardo.
True. Very true.
Really, you could essentially say they started to sell there, and what they're doing is they're getting players major league experience that they could trade at this point.
Yeah,
and that
no,
might
I'm
be
with you, man.
That might be
just
something
amazing.
That keeps Doug Melvin from dealing now. He wants to get another month and get another prospect or two out of a player because he's had a good month. He's had a good start to the season.
It's just amazing when you look at just how average he's been since he's been off the juice. And the thing about it is, this is a team that hitched its wagon to him. And since the fallout from the Biogenesis, man, oh boy. And what's kind of funny is if it would be interesting to see if the Brewers. Now, granted, we're talking about for the rest of this year. The only thing the Brewers should care about is figuring out a way to sell tickets in a bad year. And now, granted, it's not going to help if they trade Ryan Braun. I don't think they would trade Ryan Braun. Same with Carlos Gomez. I don't think they would trade any of those two just because they have to sell tickets and nobody's going to come out to see, you know, to see Matt Garza. I'm sorry, no offense, Matt Garza, but people aren't coming out to see you pitch. Okay, they're coming out to see Ryan Braun and they're coming out to see Carlos Gomez and maybe Gene Segura. But it would be interesting to see if there's going to be a team out there that'd be like, you know what, you know, maybe to call to inquire to see if they're interested in trading them. I mean, maybe you might be able to get somebody and also take off that contract off his hands. It's going to be interesting to see that. But, Bo, that's going to do it for us, man. And it was good to be back on the air because, again, it's been a while, and I'm glad that I'm able to be here to do it. Very scary moment,
yeah.
But it's over, it's done, and I'm here, so it's all good. So, good stuff, man.
Good stuff. I'm glad you're
good
still
stuff.
Around. You had a rough
yeah,
couple
me too.
Weeks here, man. First, you did. So it's like your shoulder, and then a car accident.
Yeah.
And just wow.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was
bad
some scary
stretch.
Stuff. But But we'll be back next week. It should be fun. And look forward for the plugs on Twitter and Facebook to find out exactly when you can find us. It should be short, so it should be we'll figure it out. We'll have it up there. We'll let you know. Until next time, Bo. Thanks again. Thanks, everybody, for tuning us. So, Bo, take us out, my man.